This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
This episode is brought to you by Bumble. So, you want to find someone you're compatible with, specifically someone who's ready for a serious connection, totally open to having kids in the future, is a tall, rock-climbing Libra, and loves rom-coms with vegan pizzas on Tuesdays just as much as you do. Bumble knows that you know exactly what's right for you. So, whatever it is you're looking for, Bumble's features can help you find it. Date now on Bumble.
Hi friends, I'm Tim Whitaker and welcome to the New Evangelicals podcast. The New Evangelicals is an inclusive, Jesus-centered community that holds space for people marginalized by the evangelical church, advocates for accountability in the church, and helps you explore the Christian tradition beyond the basement of evangelical fundamentalism. This podcast is part of that work, so join us as we talk to people from all walks of life, lending their expertise and wisdom to us as we renegotiate our faith and find better paths forward. What up, party people? Oh boy. Listen, this is one of those lives that it's more about just presenting to you a video so we can all participate and watch together. Because I watched this interview, and we'll get into the details in a minute here. I watched this interview and went, I gotta watch this with a live audience so I don't feel alone in just watching this train wreck of an interview. So the first thing I had to do was I had to bring my friend Billy back on. Hello, Billy. Good to see you.
Hey, it's good to be here.
You've been on the show many times. You and I talk often offline. We become quite friendly. I love that. And this is a very interesting thing we're going to do because you were on the podcast a week and a half ago. And part of our conversation was that you were targeted by libs of TikTok. Okay. Mm-hmm. And the founder, or I guess the person behind the account, her name is Kaya. And she did this interview with another journalist, and they recorded the whole thing. It's one straight shot interview, no edits. It's a train wreck. So I thought, you know, Billy, let's just go live on YouTube one day and just watch this together and just let an audience join us because, wow, this thing is mind-blowing.
Yeah, no, it's insane. I remember just like texting back and forth, like, have you seen this thing? Oh my gosh. Cause remember at first this was coming out with like those little clips that somebody was taking of it and like posting them all over social media. And eventually just had to go, I got to go watch this thing.
Yeah, top to bottom. So today we're going to do that. We're going to just go top to bottom and watch the whole thing. Of course, friends, listen, the goal is never to dehumanize people, including Kaya. Now, I will say that Kaya does a lot of things that are dehumanizing. I mean, her account, Libs of TikTok, is linked to things like this, okay? After Libs of TikTok posted, at least 21 bomb threats follow. So this person posts things that usually dox queer people or dox schools. You can listen to Billy's story on our podcast. You can hear how she was targeted by those of TikTok. So the reason why we're doing this is because this really intersects with politics and culture with an adjacent element of Christian nationalism. Because a lot of people who follow this account are folks who believe that, you know, there's a grooming agenda out there that is coming to trans kids, and we have to stop the books that are trying to ruin the innocence of children. And Libs of TikTok is one of the main accounts behind a lot of that propaganda. So the question is, what happens when somebody who makes their whole persona and personality this stop the grooming agenda, what happens when an actual journalist journalist asks them actual questions. And the result is this interview. Anything I'm missing, Billy?
No, I was going to say, like, anybody who is actually trans or even just queer and interacts with Christian nationalism at all has definitely had Libs of TikTok content thrown at us in the past. Like, it's hard to separate the two. They use her as sort of their source for propaganda that they're going to use against queer people.
100%. So today we're going to go through the whole interview, top to bottom. Well, we're going to let as much of it as we can play. We'll try and fill in some of the gaps. I just want you to witness, like, the dichotomy of how someone is so loud and proud on Instagram and on TikTok and on, oh, I'm sorry, she's not even on TikTok, on Twitter mostly, saying things that are crazy harmful. And what happens when someone confronts her on that? What's their response? So that's what we're going to witness today. As always, friends, thank you for being here. Billy, thank you for being here. I'm excited to get into it. You ready?
Let's do it.
All right. Friends, the audio in the beginning is a little low because they're outside. So if you can't hear things correctly, I'll try and keep our microphone, you know, lower than the audio. Let me know. Here we go. Buckle up. Good luck. Here we go.
Okay. Thank you so much. Yeah, of course. Oh my gosh, the struggles of LA, I swear.
So just so we know, the person on the right is Kaya. She is the founder of Libs of TikTok. And the person on the left is Taylor Lorenz. She's a journalist. That's the current setup.
I'm just going to say, and like, even to start off with what we were talking about with dehumanization, Kaya wore a t-shirt that with a picture of Taylor crying on it to the interview.
Yes.
Like, it starts off with just this aggressive.
Yes. Thank you. The person on her shirt is the person that's interviewing her without a mask. All right. Let's get ready. Here we go.
Okay. Well, now that we're going. So thank you so much for meeting. First of all, I saw Seth Dillon today saying that you guys are no longer affiliated. What happened with there? I know that he invested in you early. Was he a huge supporter of you? What happened to that relationship?
Seth Dillon is behind the Babylon Bee, just so folks know.
For what reason?
Personal reasons.
Yeah?
Yeah.
What? You didn't align with...
Totally amicable. I love Seth.
Yeah.
He's a great mentor.
So why wouldn't you want him involved, or, you know, why isn't he involved in the business anymore?
Just personal reasons. I'm not going to get into it.
Oh, okay. When did that sort of break off?
Recently.
Uh-huh. So how many staffers? Tell me a little bit more about your organization.
We are a small team, just a couple people.
And it's all distributed?
It's what?
It's all distributed, as in it's all remote, pretty much? Do you have any office space?
It's remote, yeah.
Got it. So when did you start, I guess, what got you into all this? I've always wanted to ask you. I know, I mean, I wrote about sort of the history of your Twitter account, but how did you get involved in politics?
That t-shirt.
If you watch any of my interviews, I talk about this all the time, but just, you know, COVID radicalized me.
Yeah.
In what way? And they were, like, forcing us to wear masks and not letting us leave our homes. And, you know, not letting us work and people losing their jobs. And then people now forcing a vaccine, an experimental vaccine, people dying from the vaccine.
So how did that get you interested?
We're already in like propaganda territory.
It got me interested in politics. And then once I was interested in politics, I stumbled upon this... this whole movement, and I was absolutely appalled by what I was seeing.
Appalled by what?
Go ahead.
So now I just want to, like, at this point, that phrase that she used, this whole movement, I just want to say, watch for the fact that over the course of this whole video, she never really does come out and clearly define what the trans ideology or gender ideology that she's against is. At various times, Taylor's going to talk about she supports it. Kaya talks about being against it. But she really never does quite lay it out. And it reminds me of another recent interview with some Moms for Liberty people who just could not define the term that they're against. And I'm still to this day, like, honestly, I'm not sure if it's that they know that if they define it, it's going to show how amazingly queerphobic they are, or that they really don't have a working definition. They just are against something kind of vague, all of that queer stuff.
Yeah, anyway, no, for sure. For sure.
It's kind of amazing 100%. How
she defines the terms. Shauna says that she's been looking forward to this. Glad you're here, Shauna. Glad you're here. And then this is interesting. Jeff says, Tim, for what it's worth, I don't have TikTok, nor have I ever watched Libs of TikTok. So this response video of yours is my first exposure to this person and their views. It'll be interesting to view you viewing her. To be clear, Libs of TikTok is a Twitter account. They're not even on TikTok. Just want to point that out there. So, or point that out. But yes, this will be very interesting. So far, what we have is very guarded, for sure, is wearing a t-shirt of the journalist that she's interviewing of her crying and says that COVID radicalized her, which, to be fair, COVID was one of those polarizing moments where folks did tend to go in one of two ways, including myself. So that's where we're at so far. Here we go.
The radicalization of it, the way that they come after our most innocent and vulnerable population or kids. The way that it makes there's nothing logical about it. There's nothing logical about chopping off kids' body parts. There's nothing logical about giving kids porn in school. There's
two talking sexes points.
And that's it. So, you know, anything out of that, it's just based on lies and nonsense.
Yeah. I know you grew up in a sort of a more conservative community. Did you know any LGBTQ people growing up? What was your exposure to that community just in life prior to sort of understanding the world through politics?
I never really paid attention to it.
So you didn't have any LGBTQ friends or anything,
no.
Family members?
No.
So your first exposure to the LGBTQ world
was... Pause.
She did. She had LGBTQ friends or family. And the fact that she doesn't know it, I mean, I'm not going to be like, this is not a bombshell. This is not like secretly her. No, it's just that if she doesn't remember anybody, if she doesn't have anybody who was out to them, it just tells us that she wasn't a safe person for them at that
100%.
Time.
100%. Yeah, good point.
Through basically learning about it through the media ecosystem.
Through themselves, actually. They would say exactly what their intentions are, what their whole movement is about.
Uh-huh.
So I learned about it through watching their own videos.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Well... I don't know. What sort of videos were you watching? I mean, are you just talking about the TikToks that you share?
And tons more on TikTok. It's all over TikTok.
Yeah.
Very easy to find.
Yeah. I'm curious, you know, I feel like there's been, especially on, my colleagues have done great reporting on sort of like this rift on Twitter. I know that you have a very conservative fan base, and in your comments sometimes you'll see a lot of commentary about sort of the great replacement theory. What are your thoughts on that?
What are your thoughts on the comments on your post telling me to kill myself?
Horrible. Yeah, horrible. Obviously against that.
Okay, hold on. Pause. We got to pause. The question is, what do you think about the great replacement theory rhetoric, which we've covered on the podcast, but essentially it says that there are immigrants flooding our society to replace essentially white people. And her response is then to ask this journalist about death threats. So just keep that in mind.
Yeah.
So will you come out and condemn that publicly?
Oh, go ahead. What's up?
No, sorry. I was just going to say, a lot of this interview has a really sort of fascinating dynamic to it, where it's really apparent that Taylor was there as a journalist to get an interview with a public figure, and Kaya was there to have a debate with Taylor Lorenz. And they're sort of working at these sort of weird cross purposes throughout this. So Taylor asks a question, and Kaya takes it as though they're like on a public debate stage. And I mean, apparently, she knew they were filming. And this was, I think, part of what she wanted to do, which makes it all the sadder that she did it so badly, that she wanted it to be a kind of like showdown between her and Taylor. And Taylor's just going to treat it like an interview the entire time.
Right.
And so every time Kaya throws one of these questions at her, she's just kind of going to sort of respond to it as quickly as she can and move to her question, either like re-ask the question that Kaya had ignored or ask a new question. It's really sort of, it's this weird experience of watching two people having different discussions with each other at the same time.
It's mind-blowing. All right, here we go.
Oh, I would condemn it any time. I'm against murdering anyone, of course.
So you're against death threats against me?
I'm a big, you know, as somebody that's dealt with a lot of online harassment, I don't defend threatening to murder anyone.
Right.
But I guess I'm curious, you know,
because a lot of times it comes after an attack from in the media, like someone like you or another journalist.
So are you saying that, like, you know, if somebody posts something and then attacks follow, that person should answer for those attacks?
No, that's not what I'm saying.
Oh, okay.
I'm saying that they people like you tell me that all the time. So I'm just asking if you think the same thing.
Yeah, I don't think I have said that here, but I think it's kind of interesting. I guess in the conservative movement, there's this ideology around sort of white nationalism.
Brings it back to the question.
Obviously, kind of a hardline ideology that's generally been pretty critical of Jewish communities. And I'm wondering, as a Jewish woman, how do you feel about sort of aligning yourself with those people and accounts. You know, you see this sort of rhetoric in your replies. And I only bring it up, I'm not saying that you necessarily endorse that rhetoric. I would imagine that you don't. But how do you kind of think about those nuances when you're thinking about kind of the audience that you're building?
Some of your audience says we should chop off kids' body parts. What do you think about that?
I don't know what you're talking about.
Not an answer to a really good question.
So she chops off her breasts.
I'm a big, you know, I believe in personal liberty and bodily autonomy, personally.
So kids should be able to cut off their breasts if they think that they're boys.
I mean, I believe in gender ideology. I guess I personally, my feeling is that I believe in personal liberty. I grew up in a town where a lot of people, for their middle school graduation, women got nose jobs. I knew somebody that got a boob job at age 14. And I guess I struggle to kind of understand the criticism when there's certainly no criticism of that sort of thing, right? But then there's criticism of this other sort of gender-affirming, you know, stuff. So
you're comparing a boy being allowed to chop off his penis to a teenage girl getting a nose job?
Well, just to be extra clear, I don't believe that 13-year-olds are able to make those sort of medical decisions.
That is true. That's
minors
not happening.
Are, yeah.
Oh, really? And where?
Actually, let me say a thing about that. Because
go ahead.
This doesn't really come up, and it is often left out. So there's a lot of conversation about children and gender-affirming procedures and surgeries and so forth. And, you know, it's, I don't know, it is what it is. And I would recommend people go and find out. The short version is that minors generally are not allowed to have any kind of surgery. Occasionally, in rare circumstances, they can when it's really bad gender dysphoria. And it requires all kinds of people signing off on it. Like every single one of the surgeons or doctors involved needs to be comfortable with it. They need to be therapists on it. And of course, there needs to be parental consent. And this is the part that I feel like she doesn't ever want to bring up, is that minors just aren't given access to almost any significant medical care without parental consent. Like minors don't have that kind of autonomy over their bodies.
Yeah.
Absent parental consent. And so the parents aren't being brought into this. And I think it's really, really fascinating. Chaya likes to present this as though kids can sort of spur of the moment decide they want top surgery. And they
right.
just can't.
Right. Great point.
There's National Hospital in D.C. gives 16-year-olds hysterectomies.
Oh, 16-year-olds.
They gave me that. They told me that directly. They said 16 girls and younger. That's what they said. So hysterectomies. There are definitely minors. I know for sure as young as 12 who are getting double mastectomies. They definitely allow vaginoplasties for minors and phalloplasties. I'm not aware of a specific case of a minor, but they allow 18-year-olds. Yeah,
which has, you know, okay, 18-year-olds, you're an adult. But let's just get back to the great replacement stuff, because I'm curious, what are your thoughts on that whole ideology?
I mean, how many? There were times that. There were some months over the past 3 years that there were more illegals coming into our border than children being born in the U.S. Does that not look like they're trying to replace us?
Wow.
I guess sort of
they're
imagine America
in a whole
as
new population.
A melting pot. Isn't that sort
Can
of
I pause in here?
Yeah, let's just note. Let's just stop and note that Kaya's formulation of this contrasts what she calls illegals with children, right? The one deeply humanizing children, the other one, she is reducing people, human persons, to a legal status.
Yes. Just thank you. Yeah, call that out.
America was founded.
No, but they're actually bringing in more people than are actually being born.
And who is
so
that?
So I guess it sounds like you sort of do ascribe to this theory of the great replacement.
I doesn't want
to
answer that question.
How does that make
I just
you
look
feel?
At the facts and the numbers.
Well, so, I mean, just let's give a corollary, right? A lot of Jewish people fled, you know, Europe, came over here also as immigrants. And there's a lot of criticism towards Jewish people in those movements, in those far-right movements. So I'm just wondering, as a Jewish woman, sort of how you feel about that and your role in cultivating this fan base that might think of you as a minority or an outsider.
Not all cultures are equal.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Oh
my.
So,
wait. Watch. It's so bad. It's so bad. And okay, here's the thing, because I know it's about to come.
All right, should I keep playing?
Right, not all cultures. Well, let's pause for a second. Not all cultures are equal. Is that nicely like dog whistly racism? Right. It's that like I'm not talking about race. I'm talking about culture. It's sort of trying to put a little bit of a buffer.
Yeah.
Except for what she's about to say. right? Like, okay. Kaya's about to do this, like, and in case you think I maybe wasn't being racist, let her, she's gonna keep talking.
Here we go.
I know you have a lot of concerns about educational materials and books, library books and things, especially...
They're importing people who want to destroy America. Who come here and do not stand for what America stands
She's
for.
She's literally just reading tweets from my Charlie Kirk in her head.
And we see it. There's time after time after time after time. They come in, they're destroying our cities, they bring crime with them.
That's not true.
They are bringing them in to replace us. And
I think it's people terrible.
From various countries, you know, they're all different.
And the thing is, like, Taylor shocking. Had given her an out. Like, Taylor had actually asked a different question. She'd moved on about, like, library books. And guys, like, shocking. Just in case you did not understand what I was saying.
Right.
I'm going to do the racism as loud as I can.
And then she repeats talking points that have been debunked. We know that immigrants actually are half as likely to commit violent crimes compared to the average citizen, like, in America, right? And so it's like, again, so much for the data and numbers. Like, she doesn't know what she's talking about. And this is only the beginning of what is going to be a very long and painful interview that shows what happens when propaganda meets actual questions and you have no answers. So you result to more propaganda that you've inhaled over time thanks to your right-wing bubble. Let's keep it going.
You know, just back to the sort of education stuff, I know that you're interested in removing a bunch of books from libraries that you consider inappropriate. I was just wondering, out of all the books that you've sort of tried to get removed, how many have you read?
I've read a couple of them.
Uh-huh. Which ones?
Genderqueer.
Uh-huh.
I've read This Book Is Gay.
Uh-huh.
I've read Flamer. I've read, what were some of the other ones? My Shadow Is Pink. It Feels Good to Be Yourself. Mm-hmm. There's so many more. Tons of them.
How do you kind of square? Would you say, I feel like you are, or at least I feel like you've spoken about free speech before and the need for free speech and sort of supported Elon Musk's sentiments in that area. Would you say that you're a free speech supporter?
Yeah.
So how do you square the sort of being this free speech supporter with wanting to ban literature?
What kind of literature?
Oh. Any kind of literature. I mean, I would think
what
that
kind of literature am I trying to ban?
Oh, I thought you were just trying to say you've made an effort to get books removed from schools.
What kind of books?
Books dealing with LGBTQ people and sexual
education. No, that's not what I said.
Oh, so you're not trying to get any books banned from school.
That's not what I said either.
Okay, why don't you explain to me how you're thinking about this?
You just accused me of wanting to ban books. What kind of books am I trying to ban?
You tell me.
I'm not trying to ban anything.
But you're not trying to ban any books.
Who said I'm trying to ban books?
Are you trying to remove books from libraries?
From public school libraries.
Okay. So how do you square your sort of notion of free speech and free expression and allowing all of that stuff?
I think what she's doing is she's saying, look, I'm not advocating for banning books blanketly in America. Like we have to burn every copy in Barnes & Nobles. I'm just saying in the public school system, these books should be banned. So therefore, I'm not actually advocating for banning books. It's like, it's just a sleight of hand, right? Because again, if you go to, and I don't recommend it, especially if you're someone in the queer community, but if you go to her Twitter, you will see quite the opposite position being taken. It's not like this at all. It's very clear what they want. And they're always targeting either minority-based or queer-based sex ed books that are designed for adolescents who are coming of age to understand how to, you know, how those kinds of sex, that kind of sex works, right? And for her, that's the grooming she's talking about. So, geez Louise, what kind of books am I trying to ban? My goodness.
Literature removed and wanting access to information removed.
What kind of literature?
Exactly.
Porn, gay porn.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And what do you consider gay porn in these books?
You want to see it?
Are you talking about the stuff that you've tweeted, basically? You consider
it inappropriate. Like there's pictures of like blowjobs and like how to have gay sex with like naked people and people masturbating and stuff. Yeah.
Did you?
Like pictures of it.
Yeah. Oh, totally. And yeah. I went to public school. And we had a sex ed class in public school where we were shown, you know, information about sexual health and, you know, sex and masturbation and things like that. I'm curious about your own education. I mean, was that something did you ever go to a sex ed class, or is this all sort of new to you where you're sort of learning about how this works in public schools?
I don't live under a rock.
So you did have sex ed classes when you were growing up?
We had some kind of education, yeah.
Uh-huh. So you do think it's important for children to have education? sex education?
Not the way they're doing it in public schools.
Uh-huh. How are they doing it?
What are we talking about?
They're giving kids porn and telling third graders that they should masturbate. They're giving middle school children guides to gay sex and anal sex, sex toys.
How would you describe the type of sex education?
This is shocking because sex ed has been taught in schools for decades. Sex ed includes pictures that are for educational purposes of how sex works, how physical anatomy works. The only difference is that now that there's queer representation in some of these books, that has now become the new dog whistle for the grooming agenda, right? Meanwhile, there are plenty of queer children, or I should say really young adults and teenagers, who need access to that kind of education like heterosexual students do. This is not complicated.
No, but notice what she's doing, right? It's if it is a depiction of gay sex, it's porn. Whereas if it's a depiction of straight sex, it's educational literature.
Right.
But by using that, with that quick equivocation, she's able to do this thing where she posits herself or she presents herself as a you know, anti-porn crusader or something like that. And this is how she justifies her book bans and all the rest of that. Yes. But what's behind it is just if it depicts anything sexual that also happens to be queer, she feels comfortable calling it porn, which I think is why she kept trying to throw things back at Taylor, because she wants Taylor to say that. She doesn't want to have to actually explain it to Taylor herself.
Yeah, I agree. Good point.
That you would like to see in schools?
At this point, I want all sex education actually removed from schools because I don't trust the schools to do it. After what we've seen, I don't trust them at all.
You're right. Trust the church, Kaya. That's a much better solution. Like, you should trust purity culture, white evangelicalism to give kids a proper sex education. Nothing could go wrong with that idea. Like, who else is part of education? Is understanding how sex works. Like, this is a normal biological human function, right? And the reality is that children are being exposed to porn at earlier ages, and we don't want them learning from pornography. We want them to learn about how sex works and how your body works and what consent looks like and all of that stuff by trained educators and with parental involvement. No one's saying that shouldn't be a thing, to walk people and children through that process. What do they say? It's 100 1-minute conversations, not one 100-minute conversation, right?
Absolutely. And this is the thing. I made this point on the podcast, and I want to say it again here, that most queer kids, teenagers, have straight parents, not all, but most do. And those straight parents are going to be particularly unlikely, again, not never, but unlikely to be equipped to do good queer sex education for those queer kids. So having a school system that is trained in that, having experts who can come in and understand how that works and understand child psychology and can do that in an effective and healthy way is really important.
Totally.
And that's what would go away. I mean, many things would go away, but that's one of the things that we would lose if you just suddenly said no sex education in school. But that's exactly what Kaya seems to want to get rid of.
Right. And notice how there's no solution. It's just, I want to get rid of this. No, nothing's going to be filled. It has to go away. So we're not talking about like deeply thought out perspectives of why this should be replaced. It's just, oh, it's bad and evil and grooming children, therefore it should go away. Like, okay, well, thanks for that. It does absolutely nothing in the real world.
Yep. Zero. We need to completely eradicate it and then redo it in a normal way that's appropriate.
So I saw you said that normal you got way, banned right. from normal. Stripe today. How much money did you have tied up in that platform?
I'm not going to get into that. Mm-hmm. They already restored me.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So you're back.
Yeah.
I noticed, you know, I think it was around last summer, you deleted a lot of your tweets and you sort of stopped posting. This is when Seth Dillon kind of tweeted, you know, asking if you fell off or, you know, saying that you weren't posting as you used to. What happened during that time? And did you think about quitting?
I have no idea. And no, I never thought about quitting.
Mm-hmm. You don't know what happened?
Why'd you delete all your old posts?
It was just a one-time editorial decision. I stand by all my posts.
Hmm. You know, I guess speaking of deleting posts, you still have a post up accusing the Uvalde shooter of being trans. Obviously, that's been debunked.
Yeah, there's a community note on it.
Uh-huh. So why not remove that post if you're so comfortable with removing posts?
Because there's a community note. I think it's clear. It's obviously it was unintentional. There was a watermark on it. It was from an account that was going around, And I'm glad there's a community note so people know that.
Do you believe if, say, a journalist posts something factually incorrect or wrong, especially about someone else, you know, if somebody was to say something factually wrong about you, do you believe they should remove that, or do you think they should be able to keep that content up?
Twitter is free speech. You know, people lie about me all the time on there, and they don't get taken down. If you want,
Billy, I can't do this. I cannot do this. She literally says there's a community note on my blatantly false tweet that I know is false, and I'm going to keep it up because why? Because, and then she blames someone else. Like, she doesn't even forget personal responsibility. It's, oh, well, there was a watermark on it. It wasn't my video. So I'm not going to take any ownership of my 2 million followers who might have seen that tweet, right? It's someone else's fault. It blows my mind.
Beyond that, it's a meme. It's a graphic. So, yeah, there's a community note on it, but that doesn't stop anybody who wants to from just downloading the graphic and then reposting it independently, which people, I mean, I've seen that one. People have kept posting it. Like, if she took it down, at least this giant, giant account wouldn't still be sharing this thing. Because there are a lot of people who are more than happy to share it, even though it's got a community note on it.
I'm pulling out my ever-thinning hair.
It has to go both ways.
So you believe that people should be allowed to keep up wrong information about you and have no recourse, be able to keep that up?
Free speech is free speech.
Okay. So I'm kind of curious how you square that with the letter that you sent this morning to vSphere, claiming that you were going to try to sue her for slander. If free speech is free speech, then why are you threatening your critics with lawsuits?
Well, defamation is different.
So would you call misidentifying a shooter's sexuality defamation?
No, I wouldn't.
Wow.
Like I said, there's already a community note on it. So I'm glad that people now.
And you admit that it's wrong, right? Was the Uvalde?
Yeah, and I wasn't the creator of that image.
Sure, but you can imagine if somebody amplified wrong information. Yeah.
The media, like Washington Post and other places, they lie all the time. They're never held accountable. They never remove it. They lie and lie and lie. So I am not gonna. If you want to hold me to that level, then I get to hold you to that level as well.
I'm pausing. I see you melting, and that's fair.
I'm melting, Billy.
This is the thing, like, if you want to hold me to that level, yes, we want to hold you to the level of you can't lie. She's going to call herself a journalist. Sorry, I'm getting excited. She calls herself a journalist. She hides behind calling herself a journalist several times in this interview. Yes, we want to. If you think, because here's the thing, those papers that she mentioned, they have editorial standards. It's actually quite the scandal if they're caught saying something blatantly untrue and they don't retract it. They post whole stories doing these retractions saying, here's what we got wrong. It was very wrong. Here's why we got it wrong. And here's what we're going to do to keep from doing that thing again. And she doesn't want to do any of that. So like the answer, and this happens, you see this again and again and again when you're fighting with or arguing with Christian nationalists and libs of TikTok type people online, is they do this whataboutism. And then when you say, no, everybody should be held to the standard, like, oh my gosh. I mean, because, and Kai is doing it again and again. She started off the interview with do you think it's right for people to send me death threats? And Taylor's just like, no. And
of course
so
not.
Then we move on. But it's as though she wants to have a fight about whether or not the thing is happening rather than just say, no, that's wrong. Nobody should do that thing. Lying is wrong. Lying about people is wrong.
Right.
Nobody should do it. The Washington Post should be held to account if they get caught doing it, if they do it. Anybody should be, including Kaya. And instead she's saying, I think we should all be allowed to lie, or I should be allowed to lie because I think this other group is lying. And so like, I need to get access to those it's okay to lie rules. And like, what is wrong with your conscience at the point where you're making that argument?
While she sends defamation threats because she feels like people are lying about her, right? So it is, you can't perceive, you can't lie about me, but I can lie about things and that's totally fine because there's a community note on it. Like there's no integrity. There's nothing that is like good faith here, right? Again, this is what happens when you have propaganda meet actual journalism. You get answers like this, because the truth is, people like Kaya do not care about the harm that they're causing or if they're actually doing it on with integrity. They care about getting the outrage out of people, even if it's not the truth, until, right, a journalist calls them to account, and then all of a sudden it's defamation and I'm sending lawsuits and free speech doesn't matter. So yeah, note that. And this only gets worse. This is only the beginning. It gets worse. Here we go.
So I just don't think, you know, it's not accurate to compare it, because
was the Uvalde shooter trans?
The Uvalde shooter wasn't trans.
Got it. And so I guess knowing that you posted wrong information, you're saying it should stay up. Everybody else should be allowed to keep whatever they have
That's
up
my
as
new
well.
Ringtone.
Is that sort of your stance? Am I accurately understanding it?
Is there a law against...
No, I'm not asking a law. I'm just asking your personal sort of opinion. I'm just kind of curious because it seems like you have come after other people, such as vSphere and other critics, saying, you posted wrong information about me, take it down. I totally get that. That's your prerogative.
It's different with defaming a journalist like that. They're defaming me.
Uh-huh. And you don't think that calling a shooter trans when they weren't trans is defaming anyone?
No.
Okay.
No. The hell? Like, what? Do you not hear yourself? This again, like when this is your brain on fundamentalism of any type. There's no rhyme or reason. The only rhyme or reason is, how do I get to stay in power? How do I get to keep my agenda? And who cares if it looks like I have egg on my face? It doesn't matter, right? They're defaming me. They should be sued. What I said about this person was factually wrong. I don't have to change my view on it. It's not defamation. It makes no sense.
She does it, and she's got it completely bass ackwards, right? Like, it's actually meant to be people who are big public profile folks.
Yes.
Those are the ones that there's a lot more leeway in, like, saying things about them and in talking about them. Private individuals, you're supposed to be pretty quiet about them, right? There's a much like higher bar for, like, you really can't lie about and ruin the lives of private people who haven't stepped into the limelight like that.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Oh, gosh.
They're knowingly lying about me.
Uh-huh. And what would you say that you did when you sort of posted that about the shooter being trans?
Like I said, an image that was going around for months that I shared from another thing accidentally, and I'm glad there's a community note on it.
She accidentally shared it. Delete it.
I know you come from a more traditional family and sort of a more traditional culture. What does your family and think of your success? You know, you've made a huge career for yourself. You're obviously a rising star in conservative media. How's that affected your interpersonal relationships?
I'm not going to get personal.
Uh-huh.
It's such a thing.
Yeah.
Like, again, Kaya wants a debate, right? Like, Taylor's actually giving her a chance that is a golden opportunity, right? It's, hey, humanize yourself. Let us all see a little bit of the person behind the account. And Kaya is just 100% turned. She deflects every single question that gives her that opportunity in the interest of, I want to have a fight with you.
Also, notice how she doesn't want to talk about her private life, but for a living, she exposes the private life of other people, right? So, like, Billy, in your case, your private life and your teaching job of over a decade was exposed in really untrue ways, and a narrative was spun about you before you even became more of a public figure. So your life can be blown up, no problem. Right. But Kaya's life, well, she doesn't get into her personal life, into those family details. So again, it's a one way street with these types of folks.
Yep. But this is, but okay. I'm just going to make this point, because I got to make this point right now.
Make the point.
This is the thing. This is what heteronormativity, cisnormativity does, right? It says, it allows people like Kaya to suggest that anybody who is just being queer, by that fact, is inviting the scrutiny. We're being the weird ones. And that sort of automatically, implicitly invites scrutiny. Whereas straight people, cis people, are just normal. And so they get to be treated as normal. Like, that is the privilege. Well, it's one of the privileges of being cis, of being heterosexual, of being, you know, allosexual. It's this idea that you are a regular person and the rest of the regular people can empathize with you, and you shouldn't be subject to these sort of heinous attacks. But if you're queer, your queerness is treated in itself as like a fundamental invitation to being attacked.
Yeah, it's, good point. Good point.
Has it affected your life? I mean, just dealing with this sort of fame relatively overnight,
So, I mean, thanks in part to you. There's been a lot of, like, death threats, a lot of really nasty messages.
But you seem kind of proud about the press that you've received. I mean, your profile picture is showing, holding up a newspaper with you in the headline.
Yeah, a newspaper where they just basically lied about me. I thought
she's calling a lie is the claim that she is a stochastic terrorist. That is that she is intentionally posting inflammatory stuff about queer people in the knowledge or maybe even the hope that that will lead her followers to take violent action like the bomb threats, right?
Yeah.
That is
yeah.
the thing that she, that as far as I can tell, that's the thing that she keeps referring to as the lie people are telling about her. And again, that is, I mean, I can see she can argue and say like, well, that's never my intention. And you can argue, talk about journalistic ethics at that point, and they get into it a little bit. But the fact of the matter is there is a very good faith conversation to be had at this point about whether or not she is intentionally hoping that those sorts of bomb threats occur, that those sorts of just horrible attacks on people's lives and livelihoods will happen, right? So like the accusation of stochastic terrorism, one, it's an accusation. And two, but that's the thing she keeps saying is a lie. This is not people just making stuff up out of the blue. They right. have well-documented right. arguments in favor of that claim.
Well, we shared at the beginning of this live.
She says, yeah.
That Lives of TikTok is tied to, you know, bomb threats. Whenever she posts about a school or a teacher, bomb threats tend to follow. And so mm-hmm. stochastic terrorism, if I'm saying this right, it refers to political or media figures publicly demonizing a person or a group in such a way that it inspires supporters of the figures to commit a violent act against the target of the speech. So the idea is that, you know, when you have bomb threats coming to a school after someone is blowing up that account or that person on their account, you can make the argument that it's a form of this, what they're calling stochastic terrorism. That's not the same thing as saying, Kaya has, I don't know, red hair instead of brown, pass it on. It's like, well, that's blatantly not true. This is a very different kind of conversation.
Exactly.
Cool.
Just continue to make up these like lies and libels.
Even if you discount the mainstream media and just talk about the conservative media, I think your platform has risen pretty significantly. What changes has that had on you? I mean, I cover the content creator industry, and I've seen a lot of people go from sort of a very low-key life, which I would imagine you're living before, to a massive amount of attention and, you know, money and powerful people around you. How has that affected you?
Like I said, some safety issues. In part, thanks to you and to some other members of the media.
I just want to point out, and listen, let me be very clear. I do not support violent death threats. I don't support dehumanizing people. We know this, okay? When you make a living doxing people and spreading propaganda about people in the worst ways that lead to bomb threats, I also understand how people are going to get really angry about that and be very loud online and probably dehumanize you. Do I accept it and tolerate it? Absolutely not. Do I understand how that can happen though? I absolutely do. And again, like for Kaya, this is not about self-reflecting upon like, oh, is what I'm doing actually helping? Am I harming people? It's about, oh my God, this threat, this grooming threat is whatever. It's evil. It's bad. It's this. And this is the persecution I'm facing as a person who's a truth teller, which so far in this interview, we've seen very little truth and a whole lot of propaganda.
And just notice what she is doing with, and again, she's not doing it well. She's really clumsy about this. But what she's trying to do with this back and forth here is, you know, Taylor is saying, hey, there are all these threats that come after you, you know, after you talk about somebody, after you post about somebody, they come, and it's children's hospitals, it's schools, and it's teachers that get the threats and the death threats. And Kaya's like rebuttal to this, again, it's not really a response so much as her rebuttal to this is, I'm so sorry about that background noise.
That's okay.
But her rebuttal to it is, oh my gosh, they're doing the same thing to me when they report on me doing it. So she's saying, if you report on the damage I'm potentially causing,
right,
you're doing the exact same thing to me that you're accusing me of. Well, then how are we supposed to talk about this problem, right? Like,
right.
She's effectively saying, it is impossible for you to raise this issue that, hey, there's a really alarming correlation between you posting about somebody or some institution and threats to that person and institution.
Right.
She's just saying that can't happen or you're a hypocrite.
Good point.
but I'm not going to get into my personal life.
Oh, no, not about your personal life. I'm just wondering about your career aspirations. Where do you see yourself in 10 years?
We'll see. You can make all the plans you want, and God could decide something else, so...
So you don't have any sort of 5-year plan, 10-year plan?
I mean, I have plans, but nothing I'm going to share.
Mm-hmm. I'm curious, you know, if Trump was reelected, would you be interested in a job with his administration?
Maybe.
Who are you supporting in the election?
Least surprising.
There's one candidate, Trump. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Will you be campaigning on his behalf?
We'll see.
Would you prefer? Would you? I mean, are you hoping to kind of? I guess, like, would you see yourself in D.C.?
I haven't made any plans yet.
How did you get connected with Oklahoma, the state of Oklahoma? And how many times have you been to that state?
Here we go.
I was there once. They have, unfortunately, a lot of wokeness in their red state. And I'm trying to help.
How'd you originally sort of, how'd Oklahoma get on your radar as opposed to some others?
Because I started posting about the stuff going on in schools there. You know, like I do across the country. And then, you know, people were very upset that this was happening in their schools.
Yeah, they stand in bomb threats.
Yeah,
so, right. And you've exactly. been once. What do you think qualifies you to be on the board or, you know, have to do with education, the education system there? Being that I don't believe you have children in the Oklahoma schools, you don't live in Oklahoma, you've only been once. How does that qualify you to sort of serve on in that capacity?
What are the qualifications that they require to be on this committee?
USA Today reported on that, but I believe it was that you had to... Oh, God, I might get it wrong. But it, I think you have to be some sort of educator. You have to have worked as an educator.
English
okay,
literature.
I was a teacher once.
You were?
Yeah.
Okay.
Can we just,
so you feel
okay.
like that...
I did just a little bit of digging on this one. There is no record that anybody has unearthed that she was ever what you would like a certified classroom teacher. In fact, nobody can find any record of her being a teacher that I know of. She made the claim, and I suppose we should be charitable and like grant that she was some kind of educator in some capacity at some point in her life. But like, if she could have been a tutor at some point and just be calling that teaching for all we know. Her before being Libs of TikTok, she was in real estate, and there is no somebody did look it up. There is no record of her as having a teaching certificate in the state of New York where she lived before the Libs of TikTok stuff.
All right, noted.
Advise you to sort of inform policies in Oklahoma.
I wasn't aware of any kind of qualifications that they require. I don't believe they require any qualifications.
Going up.
Yeah, so. I was thinking more even just informally. But that makes sense. I guess, you know, speaking of Oklahoma, obviously we saw the tragedy.
So in case the audience missed that, essentially Kaya has been asked to be on this like committee helping to shape what books are and aren't allowed for the whole state of public schools in Oklahoma. Despite having no educational background, not living in the state, not having a child in the school district anywhere. But thanks to Ryan Walters, who's the school superintendent, who's also a raging Christian nationalist, this is the connection. So a person who doxes actual teachers, who doxes schools that causes bomb threats for Ryan Walters, who's the state school superintendent, is a prime candidate of who should sit on a committee to help shape what books are and aren't allowed in the public school system. So just let that sink in for a minute, that this is the kind of absurdity that we're working with here. No qualifications. She's 28, which again, age isn't always the major factor, but when you add it all up, it just spells a recipe for ignorance and disaster. And it pushes qualified people who study this stuff, who teach this stuff, who know what they're talking about to the side in favor of political propaganda and rhetoric. Friends, I am so excited to be partnering with Middle Church to promote their event, Freedom Rising, happening April 26th to the 28th, sponsored by the Candler Foundry and happening at Marble Collegiate Church in New York City. This is a 3-day conference that you do not want to miss. Find rest, learn how to organize political power, and dream expansively about the world we deserve. And let me tell you, this is a monster speaker lineup with absolute legends, including Dr. Jackie Lewis, Reverend Dr. William Barbara, Reverend Dr. Kelly Brown Douglas, and Robert P. Jones, the founder of the PRRI Institute, which is the place I get all of my Christian nationalism data. This is going to be a three-day event full of learning about how to take care of you and your body, how to take action on crucial issues, and how to live into different ways of being in the world. I plan on being there, and I cannot wait to see you there as well. Get your tickets now at freedomrising.org and be part of this transformative experience. That's freedomrising.org, April 26th through the 28th in New York City. I'll see you there. You move the world.
Hey, this is Jared McCrory in Montgomery, Alabama, and I am a TNE donor and so thankful to be able to give a little bit to help make this work possible. I've been listening to the TNE podcast for a few months, and it had become a regular for me with the other great podcasts I listened to help me with my own evolving faith journey, and just have been so thankful for the amazing work that Tim does, for the diversity of voices that he brings on to the podcast that I've just found so helpful for my journey. And I want others to be able to find the same thing. This work is so important and is needed now more than ever in the craziness that we're all living in. So keep it up. Glad to be a small part of the team. I hope others will join in giving so this work can continue. Take care.
Death of Next, a young child. I'm curious about your reaction. You posted a selfie shortly after people were asking you to address the issue, and you said, to the haters and the losers. Who are you addressing in that statement?
Anyone who hates me and anyone who's a loser.
Why did you choose to post that in response to people asking you to speak about this child's death?
It was not a response to that.
I guess, why would you post that prior to making any statement about Nex's death?
So, just to be clear, you're trying to police me on when I'm allowed to post selfies?
No, just curious.
Can we just pause this one? I want to ask Tim a question. Tim,
okay.
So you are a relatively social media present person now, right? Like you're something public figure-y. If somebody that you have had significant beef with over the last couple of years died tragically, and you had people coming onto your page saying, "Hey, we think that what you did contributed to this," maybe the person who killed them was somebody who had been informed by listening to you. Would the first response you would post after that be you smiling with haters, talking about the haters and the losers? Or would you feel like maybe you should address this rather significant allegation and tragedy before you go on with your life is normal social media presence?
Well, if I was someone who was based in dehumanization and didn't like other people on that level, I would probably do the former and post a picture and call those people losers. But then I would probably deflect and say, no, that's not what I meant. What you're seeing in front of you, now you're policing when I can and can't post. I would just distract from the actual issue that I did a very mean thing. That's putting it very politely for the sake of, my own personal values and the shirt I'm wearing right now. So that's what I would say to that.
Wanted to post it. I thought it was a cute picture, and I just decided to post it.
How do you feel about Nex's death?
It's very tragic. Uh-huh. It's horrible.
Do you believe Nex should have been allowed to receive gender-affirming care?
She should not be allowed to go on irreversible puberty blockers or get sex change surgery.
How do you think about the fact that, so often your posts, things that you post about hospitals, libraries, schools, etc., after you make these posts about them, they deal with threats, sometimes bomb threats, sometimes harassment.
We don't know who's calling in the threats. Look, bomb threats are bad. I've said that 1,000 times.
That's good.
People calling bomb threats should be arrested and investigated. You can't call in bomb threats. But I just don't know what does it have to do with.
Well, I guess, a recent NBC investigation found at least 33 instances where you posted about a specific person or institution, and that person or institution was immediately bombarded with death threats and violent threats, including bomb threats, other violent threats. That's a pretty significant correlation. How do you, what are your thoughts
on? Yeah, I don't know if you saw, but I got tons of death threats. This week after the entire media machine came after me. So are they responsible for those?
I don't think that there's the same correlation. Are you receiving bomb threats?
I'm receiving death threats. Like, hi, I'm going to come murder you.
Yeah, and I definitely sympathize with you there. Like, I get those
literally,
every day.
The article goes live, and then I get those threats.
I get the same thing when a Fox News article goes live.
So, is the journalist responsible? The journalist who posted the article?
I would say, there's a different responsibility when we're talking about media. And I guess to me, a death threat is different than a violent bomb threat. A death threat, I think we're kind of getting normalized to them, unfortunately, online. We get a lot of them. Probably you and I get them constantly, 24/7.
Notice how Taylor's trying to align with her on this, right?
Like, people, right?
Like Taylor is trying to have this like, hey, see, like we have a commonality here. We both get these death threats. So I feel you on that. And it's a shame that this is becoming more normalized. Keep that in mind.
Well, and the thing is, though, this is true. Like, this is, I mean, Taylor's doing a good job of this is exactly what she should be doing as an interviewer. And at the same time, regular people don't get death threats. Right. Like it, when yes. Chaya targets somebody, they start getting these death threats. And that is the first time in their life that they've got death threats. They are not equipped in any way to deal with that.
Yes.
Whereas Chaya, and again, I'm with Taylor. People should not send death threats to other people. Like
100%.
That is a very bad thing. Nobody should do that. Also, Chaya is very much used to that. She has a very public persona and she's taking lots and lots and lots of public sort of statements. Most famous people experience that. That doesn't make it okay, but it does make it different.
Yes, I agree.
And I imagine you and I can both, we have a high tolerance, right, for what we can handle online. You're taking a private citizen, you know, a gay teacher, for instance, in a small town, and you post about that person, and then that person subsequently, who had no media presence prior, receives pretty violent threats.
Yeah, it really sucks.
How does that make you feel?
We need to answer the question first, though. Is the journalist responsible for actions that have to happen after?
So you consider sort of your posts about private citizens, incendiary posts, you consider that journalism?
I'm an independent journalist.
Uh-huh. And do you think that there's a difference between doing journalism on a completely private figure that has no public presence and no institutional power versus reporting on a powerful public institution or person?
You still didn't answer the question. Is the journalist responsible for reporting for any actions that happen after the reporting?
Personally, I think that journalists should take care and should consider sort of the framing. And I think that they should do their best not to appear as if they encourage that sort of behavior.
Really quick, didn't Chaya identify herself as a journalist as well?
She did.
Right. So all these death threats that are linked to her, she just, oh, well, we don't know who's sending them. Oh, I can't be responsible for that. I don't have any proof of that. But now when the shoe's on the other foot and an article drops and Chaya gets death threats, which again are bad, oh, yep. Look, it's definitely their fault. They definitely are sending these people after me, right? So again, it's always a one-way street with this type of thinking. You're never going to, not never, but you are most likely not going to get alignment or, hey, that's a good point. I should reconsider my position on this. You're always going to get why this benefits me. And then when it doesn't benefit me, I'm going to twist it to put it back on you. And now Taylor's the one answering a question that she has no reason to answer. But because Kaya's not interested in good faith dialogue or actually answering questions, and she wants to win and own the libs, this is where we are.
Well, and this is, I was really struck by the previous question where Taylor asked her, right, but don't you feel bad about what's happening, right? It wasn't a, do you think that there's like legal liability here? None of that. She's not even getting into your journalistic ethics. She's just saying, don't you feel bad that this is happening to these people?
Yeah.
And that's not the conversation. It's just so clearly not the conversation that Chaya wants to have. She wants to have a debate. And it's awkward. It's just really deeply uncomfortable. I've seen several people in the comments talking about like she's dodging questions. And I think she is dodging questions, but a lot of it is just she responds with, but I want to have a fight, right? It's just, let me throw an accusation at you, right? It's I'm not here to have a conversation, explain myself, help the world understand me and where I'm coming from better, which is how Taylor is treating this interview.
I agree.
Chaya is just, I want to fight Taylor Lorenz.
100%.
I've noticed that you haven't necessarily publicly condemned that behavior, publicly told your supporters, listen, guys, stop calling in these bomb threats.
Who said it's my followers? Do you have information that it's my followers?
I guess Who else's followers would it be?
I don't know.
So you
There's 300 million people in this country.
So you post.
Oh, right. Again, though, that doesn't apply when
you're saying it might
Kaya
be just unrelated people.
Only when
I have
she
no
sends
idea.
Death threats.
We don't know who it is.
Have you taken steps to?
And also,
to find
we
out?
Often do know who it is, right? Like. Right. Often, when I was getting death threats after she posted about me, they would often attach her post about me to the threat, right? I mean, they're
Great
saying,
point.
Hey, this I saw this, and so I'm going to threaten you. So we often actually do know whose followers they are and whose content they're responding to.
Great thought.
We filed some FOIAs with police departments.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What have you found?
We haven't got to anything useful yet that we can use. But actually, one of them, we know it's like some foreign actor, not even from the country. So
How do you prove this? Where's the proof? Yeah. There is none. But okay.
Ooh, I can talk about this.
It seems like Twitter is your main.
What? About what?
So in terms of trying to figure out who it is, it's actually sort of strange how Kaya was putting that. So there are a couple of social media companies that exist outside the United States. One is in Russia and one's based in Cyprus that will generally not respond to subpoenas of their logs when you're trying to figure out who actually made a threat when you have these anonymous threats. Instagram will, which is how my harasser got found out and prosecuted in the end. And I believe Twitter will, at least if they get a strong enough subpoena for the user data. And if it's it's because there was a death threat, right? So in those cases, I think what Kaya is kind of playing around with here is the fact that some social media companies, which aren't based in the US, don't reveal user information. I wonder why a Russian social media thing. But whereas others will. She's kind of
Thanks for clarifying that. That's helpful.
Yeah.
Platform these days, although I know you've been posting on Rumble. How much money have you made from the platform?
It's personal.
Mm-hmm. Is that what sort of portion of your revenue is based on of Twitter as opposed to other platforms?
That's personal. So speaking of Twitter, do you regret not getting a blue check? Because then you can make tons of money.
No, I don't monetize online.
You don't monetize?
Yeah, I don't. If I was an independent journalist, maybe, but I'm not. I don't monetize on any of my social platforms.
That's an easy answer. See, Kaya, that's how it's done. Just answer the question.
You know, I noticed you sort of, speaking of the media, you've changed your approach recently, or at least it seems like you're being a little bit more antagonistic towards the media and a little bit more forceful in the way that you speak about the media. What led to that change?
Being lied about and defamed for 2.5 years.
I guess what led to, assume you felt like
Thank
that
you.
For quite a while. What led you to sort of change the way that you speak about the media or the sort of...
Well, their attacks were ramping up. So, like I said, you know, the lies and the defamation, the hypocrisy.
You know, if you eradicate transgenderism, which I believe you suggested in a post today...
No, I never suggested that.
Oh, okay. You reposted a post that was advocating for that. What would happen to the people
sorry,
that have
we have to point that out. That is such a great example of this whole interview. Right?
Right.
Kaya says, I never said that or whatever. And then Taylor goes, well, okay, you reposted someone else saying that, which is what you're saying is you agree with this, especially when you don't add a quote, right? When you repost someone's direct post, what you're saying is, yes, I endorse this. So Kaya tries to get off on like these technicalities, but she's lying. Like she is lying through her teeth about this. And then Taylor has to correct her. Again, journalism meets propaganda. Like it's just so clear.
Yep.
And are leading happy lives. What would happen to them? I mean, what's your plan for that?
So the question is,
transgenderism
what happens
doesn't
to trans
exist,
people
which
who are
it seems
leading
like
happy
you're,
lives.
That's what you believe. What happens to all the people living happy lives as trans people?
Well, first of all, the whole trans is—it's based on a lie. You can't change your gender.
Okay, but
so they could agree. Go live their life. I mean, I can't tell someone what to do in their house.
Sounds like you do want to tell people what to do in their house.
Right.
I never said that.
So you're totally okay with people being trans, just not as long as they're in public.
No, I never said that. They could. It's the whole thing is based off of a lie, and I think
she just didn't answer.
Be mainstream in our society.
You know what? Let's back that up. Let's sit one more time. That whole segment's worth
it.
All the way through, no commentary. Here we go.
Advocating for that. What would happen to the people that have already medically, socially, completely transitioned and are leading happy lives? What would happen to them? I mean, what's your plan for that? If transgenderism doesn't exist, which it seems like that's what you believe, what happens to all the people living happy lives as trans people?
Well, first of all, the whole trans is, it's based on a law. You can't change your gender.
Okay, but
so they could go live their life. I mean, I can't tell someone what to do in their house.
Sounds like you do want to tell people what to do in their house.
I never said that.
So you're totally okay with people being trans, just not as long as they're in public.
No, I never said that. They could. It's the whole thing is based off of a lie, and I think that this lie cannot be mainstream in our society. It's just, it's a lie.
And what harm is it causing, do you believe?
I like the truth. I like truth.
I'm saying
what's the harm of people expressing their gender identity differently than you believe it to be? What harm are they causing?
Like I said, we are a nation of truth, and I seek the truth.
By the way, she just admitted a half hour ago that, yes, she has posted false information about the Uvalde shooter, will not take it down because there's a community note. So that's when she says truth, that's what she's talking about here, right? Like, she's not actually talking about measurable, objective truth or, like, studies or data, because if she was, she would know that the studies that are coming out are actually very much in favor of gender-affirming care and how they that lowers the risk of unaliving and also promotes human flourishing. So it's not, that's not what she means by truth. What she means by truth is, I guess, her truth that if you're trans, you're living a lie and you shouldn't be allowed to live publicly, but also she never said that. So I guess you are, but you aren't. So it's just important to note for the audience to call that quiet part out loud.
I mean, it's really significant. The trans philosopher Talia Betcher talks about policing reality or reality enforcement, right? It is Taylor's understanding of the truth. So she's saying we are a nation of truth, and she wants to use, in many cases, actively, the power of government, think about her Oklahoma job, to enforce her understanding of what the truth should be. Yeah. Right? She's saying we're going to battle over the truth. There's no space for, like, hey, how do we handle a disagreement over what is the truth in civil society? She doesn't seem to have any space for that. It's just got to be one, which is why she got so weird over the, like, well, can trans people even be trans in private? Can they express themselves in private? I never said that, right? The I never said that is so remarkably cowardly, right? She's not even willing to say yes on that one or no. It's just, I never said that. You can't quote that as holding that position. It's amazing.
It's my mind. I had smoke coming out of my ears at this point in the interview when I first watched it. Like, she cannot be for real. This lady has 2.9 million Twitter followers, and right wing pundits like Charlie Kirk, Ali Stuckey, Matt Walsh see this person as, like, a credible source of fighting the whatever they want to call it, the grooming agenda. And when you get down to it, these are her answers. They are, and I mean this, they're intellectually pathetic. Like, they're not even. Like, oh, this is a harmful view and here's why. There's just nothing to even commentate on. It's just like, okay, well, if that's your take, then, like, I guess you can have it. But also you're in a position of power to help shape law. That's why it's so scary.
Absolutely.
About the harm. What's the harm? You might believe it to be false, but what's
the harm? The harm is that there's a lie that is very mainstream and is being embedded into every institution.
I guess I'm wondering what the material harm is. Aside from it's maybe something that you disagree with, as in your version of the truth is different than their version of the truth, what is the material harm of them living their life as a woman or man or gender that you don't agree?
Not anything that's wrong. Is there a material harm necessarily?
So there's no harm.
I didn't say that.
So can you name a single harm?
The way that it's pushed onto kids, first of all.
What's pushed onto kids?
Gender ideology, transgenderism.
But if they're leading happy lives, and they just are leading a
different... Well, there are studies that show that they're more suicidal after transition.
No, that's not true.
Yeah, there's a Thank study you. Out of Sweden.
That is not yeah. true. That-
And for the record, audience, we've debunked this. Billy and I talked. We did a response to Frank Turek, I think, and Melissa Dowdery, and we went through the Swedish study. We went through all that, so I'm not going to rehash it here. But it's definitely in our video library. You can watch the whole thing. That has been debunked 1,000 ways to Sunday. So,
it's true. I swear, when Kaja Rajcik said the Swedish study, every trans person in the world, wherever they were, whatever they were doing, felt the need to go, like, take a shot, right? Like, I was just. Because trans folks, they got one. They have one study that they just have misinterpreted so many times that now they treated their misinterpretation as true. It's ridiculous.
I love that. Yeah, great point.
It's not true.
Yeah, you can look up the study.
Well, taking into account all of the happy people that have transitioned, who are not harming anyone, you can't come up with a single material harm.
Come play a gig.
So if someone says, I'll be happier if
come
I'm
play
blind,
a gig in
should
Philly.
A doctor pull their eyes out?
I think that's quite different than gender ideology, but people do, you know, I guess.
Someone says I'm happier if I chop my dick off, and we should just let them do that.
Oh my God.
I think, you know, there's a lot of gender affirming care that women do, right? I mean, women ascribe to certain gender things. You see women getting boob jobs to affirm their gender. I mean, we're in Los Angeles. We see this kind of gender affirming.
So again, you're comparing boob jobs and nose jobs to,
well, they're gender affirming.
Buying into the lie that they could change their sex.
Breast enhancements are gender affirming for women. There's a lot of women that feel small chested. They feel like it would be gender affirming for them to have plastic surgery. And they're allowed to do it. And I notice that you don't critique that. I guess I'm curious, Haya, you know, there are a lot of people that have ideas about women, right? And about what makes a woman, right? What makes a appropriate woman? How should a woman, you're saying you're against people sort of like living lies or living outside this ideology that you've constructed. Some might say, look, we're both women over the age of 25, working, I certainly don't have kids, you know, they might consider that not okay for a woman. Do you think it's up to the? Do you think it's okay for them to dictate how, you know, you live your life as a woman?
Right.
Do you think it's up or sort of where does that line?
Great question.
Get drawn.
Great question.
So again, you're comparing boob jobs to a teenage girl chopping off her breasts.
Well, first of all, teenage girls get boob
not
jobs.
Not answer your questions.
Yeah, right. Translation. Right, I'm not going to answer your question. Exactly.
Breast enhancements are gender affirming for many women. I'm asking you, why is it that people have to live under your sort of view of gender? And
it's not my view. It's science.
By the way, I just want to point out that some women get breast reductions. That's permanent. So there are a lot of reasons people get different types of surgeries for different reasons, right? And again, what Kaya is doing here is she is taking on a topic that she obviously knows nothing about. Like, she knows literally nothing about it. And she's just making false equivalencies and trying to draw these comparisons to, again, she knows that this is going to go online, and she has to give her base the red meat, right? Oh, look, this ridiculous liberal journalist is comparing boob jobs to little children chopping their penises off. And it's like, first off, again, we've already proven, and we already know that's not what's happening. But also, she has to give her audience the red meat so they go, wow, these liberal journalists are crazy. They can't even think through the reality that actually, it's a good point, right? Breast enhancements or reductions can be very much gender affirming for different types of people, right? So we already have specific types of gender affirming surgeries that are done. In fact, there are TV shows you can watch about what happens when those surgeries go wrong, and then doctors try and fix it. It's a reality TV thing, right? So that's already a thing. But this particular type of gender affirming surgery is where all of a sudden the line becomes too blurred, and Kaya says, "Oh no, we're a nation of truth, not a nation of lies."
Yep.
Facts. It's biology.
But biology, if we're talking biology, there's a spectrum of gender. There's people that are intersex.
That is a very rare medical condition that has nothing to do
just,
with someone
this,
deciding
this
that
line.
They...
Yeah. Those of the audience who are the post-evangelical, ex-evangelicals are going to have to be so familiar with that exchange, just with different words, right? Because Taylor asks about, like, hey, so like, this is your interpretation of the truth. Are you comfortable pushing that onto everybody? And Kaya's response is, it's not my interpretation, it's like just science, right? How many times have we been told, it's not my interpretation, it's just the plain meaning of the Bible? And then Taylor comes back with, like, well, clearly it's not that plain. Here's intersex people. And Kaya's like, that doesn't count. It's unusual, and therefore it doesn't count. Like, how many of us have talked to somebody who said, it's just the plain meaning of the Bible? And you say, well, what about this? This isn't very plain. And they say, that's unusual, and therefore it doesn't count. And they keep going. And you're saying, you want to pull your hair out and say, like, oh my gosh. Like, oh my gosh, you cannot separate your interpretation from
exactly
a reality that you just don't have access to.
Intersex people exist. like deal with it. You know, that just because they're not, I mean, I what's the stat? I'm not sure how true this is, but I've heard that there's about as many intersex people as there are redheads.
Yeah.
Depending on how you- so again, like they exist, they're people. And we don't think that redheads are like, oh, well, all people have either brown or blonde hair, except for those weird redheads. But we don't really talk about them because they're it's just, it's a different hair color people have. Yeah. Not as common, but it's a thing.
And can we just, I mean, even if there was only one intersex person, right? This is the thing. Science works by falsification, right? Like one intersex person falsifies this binary hypothesis. And yet they want to cite science and not follow its rules. Like if you have one falsifying example, you have to rethink your entire system.
Yeah.
But they don't want to do that. They, you know, half the time they say science and then they're like, well, my common sense, which is just experience, is sort of the opposite of science, right? Like citing your common sense is like citing the earth is flat because it looks flat, or the sun goes around the earth because that's what I see every day, right? Like those are the common sense conclusions. They're the exact opposite of the science conclusion. So they want to cite science when it gives them an epistemic edge, right? But then they want to ignore any kind of scientific method when they realize that actually doesn't back up their position at all.
100%. That's a great point.
Be the opposite gender. And they're
out. I guess I'm still kind of struggling to understand how you think if your view, say tomorrow Trump is elected, he says, all right, we're going to all live by Haya's, you know, decisions, right? What about all these happy trans people that are living their lives that are not harming anyone? What harm are they doing by living their life as a woman who radically transitioned? They're adults. You know, I understand you have problems with kids, but with adult trans people, what's the harm that they're doing to society?
To society, it's they're spreading a lie that is affecting children also.
Uh-huh. Yes.
So you just believe Billy, that's gender is a lie. And what if somebody said
trans, you can't change your gender?
And what if somebody said to you, you know, you're not a real woman. You're not a real woman.
That's what we say. You can't change your gender. I'm a woman. I found that out. It doesn't change, right? It's the people who want me to go around pretending to be a man that want me to change my gender. I.e. it's people like Kaya who want me to change my gender. And also, let's just say there are gender fluid people out there. They don't change it either. They find that it changes over time, but they don't change it, right? So, no, you don't change your gender. She's right, except she's saying the opposite of what actually that implies.
That makes sense.
Again,
because maybe you don't meet these certain specific definitions of femininity.
That's fine. I don't care. They can call me whatever you want.
Oh, but what if you would be forced to live by that system? Do you think it's fair that you would, you know, be forced?
Is that based in like science?
Well, I don't think any of it's really based in science.
Well, it is.
Gender is a social construct.
You know, well, gender is actually made up.
Exactly. Yes, we agree on this.
Ding, ding, ding. Like, you're getting it. Yes. And then here comes the letdown.
By a child predator, by a pedophile.
We don't agree.
Yeah. So he made up gender, and now they conflate the two, and they use it to basically trans kids. So there are actually two sexes.
That's a fun tidbit for your audience. She's talking about John Money, who was a deeply problematic researcher. A lot of trans people don't like him. That's who she's referring to as a... that's who she's referring to. Also, she's dead wrong. The sex gender distinction existed prior to him. He did do certain things with it and popularize certain stuff. Again, trans people don't actually like him. So, but that's its own whole thing. But as early as just because, you know, I got to drop this. C.S. Lewis made the sex gender distinction in a book like 20 years before John Money. So the sex gender distinction did pre-exist her, pre-exist him. And she's just trying to pick on one somebody that she finds easy to use as a villain in her narrative of evil transness.
Got it.
Genders, and there are many personalities. That's what I believe.
Yeah. Okay.
That's a new talking point, by the way. I heard it from Charlie Kirk, too. There's two genders and multiple personalities. That's their way of kind of like, it's just a very, again, it sounds great. Oh, that makes sense now. But there's nothing, once you interrogate it, it actually makes no sense.
You know.
And by the way, if I may, there are plenty of people, probably including Charlie, because I've heard him speak, who would not say to a man who likes to paint his nails, that's just it's a different personality. I totally get it. No, that's weak. That's effeminate. You have to be this man who likes to shoot things and like be super strong. So even they wouldn't really actually welcome someone with a quote unquote different personality, you know, who dressed or did things that were counter to whatever the dominant understanding of masculinity actually was. I just want to point that out. And make sure that we're clear on that.
A lot of LGBTQ people say that your posts cause an enormous amount of pain. How does that make you feel?
Humanize yourself.
How does it make you feel that your reporting on me causes me pain?
I feel sad for that, honestly. Yeah.
So would you stop?
No, I'm a journalist and you're a public figure. But I'm just talking about, you know, these non-public figures, right? These non-public figures that are...
Well, if you put yourself out there on a public platform, then you're kind of making yourself
public. So anybody that posts on social media is a public figure in your mind?
If you're putting your videos out there with the intention that it should go viral, you want publicity.
So if somebody's posting on social media, which inherently posting on social media, you're looking for attention, right? You're saying that meets the bar for a public figure?
I'm not a lawyer.
But I'm asking your opinion.
Right.
I think that these people, well, first of all, a lot of the people I post about are actually in positions that are public,
but
teachers,
I'm talking about
doctors.
The people that haven't, right?
But hold on. Teachers and doctors are not inherently public figures. You know, like, you as a public school teacher are not saying, hey, internet and Twitter, I want to be famous online and have millions of followers. What you're saying is that I work in public education. I perform a public service for, you know, for a wage. In theory, at least somewhat agreed to. And Kaya's like, oh, well, I guess you're a public figure, so I have a right to expose you and dox you. That's like the logic here. It makes no sense.
Again, I'll say the first image of me that she used the first time she attacked me was she used an image I put on Facebook that I just sent out for like my friends to see, hey, started teaching again, post-transition, things are going well, right? Like, people do not use social media every single time trying to like reach the world and gain lots of attention. And I do think that's a terrible bar to set for public figure anyway. But most people's posts actually go below that, and they're just trying to reach like their friend group, their followers, whatever, and just say, hey, I got this message for people. It's ridiculously cruel what she's doing here.
Agreed.
Since that you've posted, who are not, I would argue they're not public figures. You're saying they are public figures because they're posting on social media?
They want to be public. They're public. They're going on a public platform and publicly posting a video on a social media site that is meant for your videos to go viral.
Uh-huh. And what about Twitter? Would you consider Twitter as well a platform where stuff is meant to go viral?
Every social media. If someone posts something on social media, it could go viral. It's always a risk.
Got it. So when you were building your audience and had hundreds of thousands of followers, then would you also agree that you were a public figure?
Yeah. I think that if anyone who puts something out there publicly, anyone could share their stuff.
Got it. And so, but I'm saying you consider these people, LGBTQ people, who are just posting on social media, public figures.
I said I'm not a lawyer. I don't know the legal
definition. I'm just asking your opinion. One thing you noted,
like,
and I'm only asking this because I know that you've noted that, you know, when I reported on you, that you felt like it was unfair and that you didn't meet the bar for a public figure. So I'm just kind of wondering, as somebody with such a large social media audience, you're saying people with much smaller social media audiences meet the bar for a public figure. Wouldn't you have considered yourself a public figure?
If anyone puts out content publicly, then that content could go anywhere. That's what I believe. You know, it could go viral. Anyone could share it. It could go to the wrong side. You know, they call the wrong side of TikTok. It could go, you know, people will see it. You can't control that.
She's conflating.
That's why they hate me, because they want to create this content.
She's conflating risk with the chosen action to do something cruel, right? She's saying, it's okay for me to do this thing that has huge negative consequences because you accepted the risk that might happen to you when you posted on social media at all. Yeah. Which, like, that's pretty victim blamey. It's pretty 100%. Incredibly victim blamey to do that, right? Like, yes, 100%. We do know that horrible thing can happen to people, and we accept that is in principle a possibility when we engage with social media. But we also, none of us want that to happen, and most of us don't experience it.
Agreed.
It's sort of like blaming people for getting attacked by sharks and saying, well, you know, they agreed to that when they went swimming in the ocean. Like,
right. Yeah, exactly.
You know, we think that's a tragedy. We hope that doesn't happen.
Hey, I'm Shane Claiborne from Red Letter Christians, and I am proud to team up with the New Evangelicals and Project Amplify, because Christianity is in crisis in America. There are a lot of folks who are trying to camouflage their bigotry or hatred or exclusion in the name of Christ. But at the end of the day, the word Christian means Christ-like. And so we're called to look like Jesus, to love like Jesus. Jesus said we will be known by our love. So let's reclaim Jesus. Let's take the good news of the gospel back. And I want you to join me for this project, Project Amplify, because as my friend Reverend Barber says, the way that we change the narrative is by changing the narrators. And some of the loudest voices representing Christianity haven't always been the most Christ-like or the most loving or faithful or beautiful. It's time to change that.
Let's keep going.
And they only want their bubble to see it. And then I'm like showing it to other people and they just can't handle it.
I think you're editorializing it as well.
No, I provide very little commentary, probably the least from any other Twitter account that's even a quarter of my size.
Honestly, I'm not even gonna go into this. I'm gonna say anyone who wants to go to her TikTok, you should and fact check that. I'm sorry, Twitter and fact check that because it's absolute bullshit what she just said. Like it's so blatantly a lie that it's mind blowing she can say that with such confidence.
Let's talk about drag shows.
Great, drag
shows. You've come out a lot about, you know, you're very against drag shows. Can you give any examples of children being harmed from drag shows?
Yeah, there was one where this mom was saying that her kid decided to be non-binary after watching the drag show, and then the drag queen helped the kid buy, like, new clothes to be non-binary.
That's
and
not harm.
You consider that harmful?
Well, also, I have a lot of questions about that. Like, so the drag performer met a child at a drag queen show and became friends with that child and the parent and then went shopping with that child and the parent afterward after the child came out as non-binary. Like, what's – okay, like, I would love some evidence of this. Is there a video? Right. Is there any kind of data? Because I'm not aware – I mean, listen, I can't say I'm a drag show – you know, connoisseur over here, but the idea of a performer befriending a family who they met to the point where they're going to take that child shopping for clothes just seems like very unlikely in any scenario. I mean, this would be like, you know, at a rock concert, the lead singer saying, oh, this child must be more punk rock. Let's go to Hot Topic. I'll buy him some new clothes. Like that's just, that does not happen in the world of entertainment. And I'm someone who lives in the world professionally as a drummer, I gig every weekend. It would be freaking weird if that happened in my scenario. If a parent asked me to bring their kid shopping who I didn't know, I'd say no. So I approach what she's saying with major suspicion. Major.
Absolutely.
Yeah, well, because non-binary is made up. Like you can't, there's no such thing as non-binary. And then it just leads a kid on a path.
It's like Michael Scott declaring
where
I declare
probably
bankruptcy.
They'll end up in a hospital getting some of their body parts chopped off.
You seem very against
again,
plastic.
A really bad, she said non-binary will lead a child to chopping off one of their body parts. Like, again, it just demonstrates how little she actually knows about the term non-binary. Anyway, it just, yeah. I need to highlight. Hopefully, audience, if you're listening to this on podcast later or you're watching this with us live, you can hear just how painful this interview is. Like, Kaya is someone who, for a living, doxes and exposes, air quotes, the queer agenda, and she actually knows nothing about it. Like, she knows about as much as the average Joe who listens to Matt Walsh once a week and reads a few of his tweets and thinks that somehow they understand what the hell they're actually trying to critique. The only difference is that Kaya has an audience of almost 3 million people who are sending death threats to school, terrorizing children in these schools, and also terrorizing the teachers. Oh, and thanks to Ryan Walter, she now sits on a board of directors in Oklahoma school libraries to dictate what books your child can and can't read. Welcome to the freedom of Christian nationalism. It's bonkers.
Are you against
books? I'm against sex change surgeries.
Uh-huh. What about women that want to get their boobs done, want to get their nose done, want to get cheek implants?
We're just going to go in circles.
Well, I'm just curious.
But it's good to note that you're comparing nose jobs to teen girls getting their breasts chopped off.
Well, people often, teen girls also get boob jobs to make their breasts bigger, right? So both are gender-affirming in different ways. You seem very obsessed with one and not interested in the other. So that's kind of what I'm interested in. And I guess I don't really understand that because both are gender-affirming in different ways.
I don't call it gender-affirming care. I call it sex change surgeries for people who are sold a lie that they can change their sex.
Uh-huh. where do you sort of hope this will end up? You know, like all of this sort of the advocacy that you're doing. I know you said you don't have a 5-year plan for yourself, but what are some, what's if you were sort of like going to describe your platform, what are some things that you'd like to see meaningful changes in terms of policies, laws?
Oh, I want to eradicate gender ideology from public life.
From public life completely?
Yeah, the whole thing is built on a lie.
And define
it. You certainly have a gender.
Then define
yourself.
It.
Gender ideology. No, I don't. I have a sex. Gender. There's no such thing as gender.
It doesn't have a gender.
Okay.
I said gender is made up. There's no such thing
I
as
agree
gender.
That gender is a
Wait,
completely
playing
social
gender
concept.
Is made up. It. Oh, the way the degree of not understanding what is meant by saying something is a social construct here is just. Oh, it blows me away. Like, I. Saying that gender is made up is would be like saying that pilots are made up and therefore you won't fly. Like, we have terms for things that exist in the world. We came up with those terms. We came up with those concepts to describe the world. And right. So in that sense, yes, they're made up. Just like we have people who fly planes because they are trained and licensed to do that. And we came up with a term for that. We call them pilots. Right? Like, it's so bizarre that she's just trying to act like, I don't know.
It is ignorance.
Yeah.
But it's ignorance that's been weaponized into militancy. And this is the fruit, right? A lot of freaking harm towards people based on nonsense. All right, friends. Hey, audience, how are you doing? Can we just take a breather for like 2 seconds? Are you all doing all right? I know this is an intense one. I know it's probably infuriating. If you're listening to this when you're driving, which you should not be watching, only listening. I hope that you're still on the road because I get it. But we're almost done. We got about 10 minutes left of this interview, and then we'll recap a few thoughts, and then we'll end it. But yeah, this is a doozy. And Billy, thanks for taking time out of your day to join me because I just knew we had to at least watch it together. I could not watch it alone. I had to have a friend just share my outrage and my frustration. So let's keep going.
No, it doesn't exist. It's okay. There are zero genders. I have a sex. I'm female.
There are zero genders.
Yeah.
So you want to live in sort of a post-gender world where everybody can kind of express themselves through personality however they like.
Well, that's what it is now. Uh-huh. But they're just calling it gender.
So,
but you know, there's males and females. And then, you know,
so if they were to, I'm just kind of curious here, and I'm certainly not a gender scholar, so I'm not sure, you know, maybe somebody sort of posed this question too, but if people were to just, let's just say, you know what, fine, we eliminate male, female, non-binary, whatever gender, we eliminate that. We're all just people, or we identify by our sex.
Post-gender world.
Would you still be okay with people, you know, wearing dresses if, you know, they appear to be biologically male, or, you know, women shaving their head, you know, things like that? Are you still okay with that as long as they're not calling themselves by a different name?
Don't sexualize kids. That's what I'm against.
Where did that even come from? Like, Taylor gives this long, hey, I'm not an expert, but what are your thoughts on gender? Don't sexualize kids. Like, what? What? Also, and I don't think Kaya knows this because she's Jewish, not evangelical, but if you want to talk about sexualizing kids, man, do I got purity culture stories for you for days about girls who were taught at age 10 that the dress they wore was too short and causing the older man to lust. I mean, crazy shit, but I digress. I just had to highlight that. Like, wow, I just can't believe it.
Live in a post-gender world where there's no gender, right? And anybody can just have the personality and express themselves however they want.
That's how it is now. These people who are calling themselves a different gender.
But I'm just saying, your issue is with the language around that, right? So I'm saying, let's eliminate the language. All right, do you support people, adults? Let's just talk about adults for the sake of, you know, this discussion. Do you support those adults having bodily autonomy, dressing, acting, you know, painting their nails or shaving their head or doing whatever they want to do to express themselves?
I don't care if a guy wants to paint his nails.
Guy is a gender word.
So you don't care. You don't care.
What'd you say?
Guy is a gender word, right? Like she's not, she actually can't do the thing she says she wants to do and have this, right. This agender
right.
thing.
Right. Well, if there was no gender, then you would use they, them, wouldn't you?
You would. Everybody would just be they, them. I mean, right. There are languages that aren't gendered, but you know.
Exactly.
about leave the kids out of it. Don't sexualize the kids. Don't confuse the kids.
So speaking of sexualization of kids, you know, I think one group of young people that's constantly sexualized is young women.
Yes.
What are your thoughts, and why haven't you, I guess, come out more against some of the sort of sexualization of young women, especially in the right-wing media ecosystem? There's a focus on youth in women. There's a focus on sort of women under 25, women losing value with age. This is stuff, you know, that's been...
I'm a woman in the conservative movement. I never once felt sexualized.
You've never felt sexualized yourself, but I'm saying, how do you? Why don't you speak out about sort of sexual abuse in the straight world, I guess?
So you just changed topics.
No. I'm saying, like, you're saying we're against the sexualization of kids.
Yeah.
One group of children that's constantly sexualized is young women. 13-year-old girls, 14-year-old girls are constantly sexualized on the internet, often by conservatives. So I'm wondering, especially given, you know, what some commentary has come from like people at the Daily Wire, for instance, right? They've made comments about young women, women losing value with age, which is kind of a pedophilic
Matt Walsh has said this stuff.
Ideology.
Yep.
Why not speak out on that?
I've never seen that. I have no evidence.
You've never seen young women getting sexualized?
I focus on kids.
And you've never seen young girls getting sexualized?
Yeah, ever been to a beauty pageant?
I've seen young girls getting sexualized.
There was a TLC show about young children, little girls, I'm guessing between like 7 and 12, who would get all glammed up for these beauty pageants to make their parents happy. What was it called? Was it Honey Boo Boo or something? I don't freaking know. Yeah. But like there were these shows. And so there's plenty of evidence of this. And also, to Taylor's point, you know, folks like Charlie Kirk talk all the time about how you have to get married really young and have babies really early, and how old 30-year-old women who are single with cats are really have no value, and how sad they're going to be in the future. Like they draw this distinction all the time between young women getting pregnant as soon as possible because that's where their value comes from. And once you become old, and if you're still single, you're automatically, you know, just useless, and you're part of the liberal agenda with like your blue hair. It's crazy.
I'd say and the other thing is like such an enormous part of her fan base.
Thanks, Beth.
Sexualize young trans men, especially, right? Like they get furious at the idea that these trans men are getting top surgery and ceasing to be sexually appealing to them, right? Like it's really gross, and especially trans men deal with this one a whole lot. Is this sort of really, really creepy sort of sexualization of these kids out of this sort of fear that like, well, you're not worth anything anymore if you stop presenting as a, they'll use terms like breedable female. It's really gross the way they talk about
that. That is gross.
And she has to know that. She can't exist in her own part of
The space she occupies is full of that, doubt. And friends who are listening, the show is called Toddlers and Tiaras. Thank you, Beth, for correcting me on that.
As I'm referring to the Daily Wire thing, I can't answer
okay,
for
but
that.
But let's just talk about young girls. Why don't you speak out about that? Why don't you speak out about sort of heteronormative, cisgender men, traditional men, sexualizing young girls, young female girls?
I speak out about the sexualization of kids.
But you don't speak out about sort of the sexualization of kids by straight people.
I don't discriminate on who's sexualizing the kids.
Liar.
If the kid's being sexualized.
Well, but there's only one group of kids that you're talking about, which is you're concerned about sort of people being sexualized by the LGBTQ community. I'm saying a lot of straight older men.
Not necessarily the LGBTQ. I mean, if they're, you know, I don't want straight teachers to be talking about their sexuality in schools either.
So you wouldn't be okay with this?
First of all, that makes no sense. That makes no sense, right? Because the second a teacher might say, oh, my husband or my wife, no one would think twice about that, right? If it was a heterosexual relationship, right? So obviously, Kaya doesn't care about that. She cares if that wife is married to another woman or if that man's married to another man, et cetera.
Absolutely. I think what's happening here, and again, it's she is using sexualized in a very, very, very narrow way. Like I think she is actually very intentionally trying to avoid any And the way we might use it, right, would be as if a cisgender man is talking about a 14-year-old girl in a sexual way, noticing her sexuality, commenting on her sexuality, or even, not a minor, right? Like you're just talking about another woman or talking about a woman in a way that focuses on and highlights and reduces her to her sexuality. We would say he is sexualizing her. And I don't think Kaya would. I think the way she is like making this work is that you're only sexualizing them if you are giving them the option of thinking about their sexuality and asking whether or not like they might not be straight, or thinking about their gender and asking whether or not they might not be cis or they might be trans or non-binary. So I think what she's doing is she's just wildly narrowing the scope of that term sexualized in order to sort of plausibly say that she doesn't notice any sexualization happening, but that she would be very much against it if a straight person, again, sexualized a kid. And she's about to define that, or at least implicitly define that in the way she talks, as present them with the possibility or the existence of transness or queerness.
Yeah.
Straight teacher, for instance, discussing their marriage.
I think it's weird.
Uh-huh.
Why would someone discuss their marriage in a classroom?
Honestly, I don't know. You were a teacher. I feel like teachers sometimes do that, you know? I do think that there is a sexualization of children from straight couples. I mean, I know that I went shopping for a friend recently to find little baby onesies. And when you're looking for little boy baby onesies, a lot of them say, you know, I want, where's my mommy's tits or whatever. You know, you see these kind of,
definitely,
I would say, sexual innuendo
also,
on baby's
point,
clothes. I've never seen you post about that.
Talking about his daughter,
I've never seen you post about sort of sexualization from the straight community, I guess.
Wow. I don't discriminate against who's doing the sexualization. I also, I guess, like, what are you defining as sexualization? But I've never said, like, oh, look, here's porn in school and the librarian is not straight. No, I don't care who the librarian is. I don't care if they're straight or gay or trans or whatever they want to say they are.
Yeah, you know, I think it seems... I guess I wonder why you don't focus on sort of like young girls as a woman. I mean, were you ever sexualized as a young child?
No.
I find that interesting because I think all women kind of experience that, although it depends on your community. But I do think that there's a focus on women and age as well. And there's this notion that women lose value as they age. And I know I hear that all the time in my comments from conservatives.
I've never once seen that, actually.
You've never seen that?
No.
I feel like
I've never seen a conservative figure say that women lose value when they age.
Why do you think there's such an obsession about women and ages then?
Women, I've never known there was an obsession. I don't know.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh.
Women and ages?
Yeah.
Does anybody believe her at this
point? There is a notion, especially platformed by conservative media, that women lose value as they get older. You see this espoused constantly when people are talking about reproductive capabilities. Oh, her eggs.
You're saying when they promote like family values, like, oh, you should get married and have kids? Is that what you call sexualization?
No. I'm talking about more derogatory remarks made against women and their age. I bring it up because I think a lot of your fans seem to obsess about women and ages. And so it's misogyny at its core, and I never see you speak up about that, so I was just kind of curious about...
Yeah, I mean, I guess I'm wondering, like why you don't speak up about the sexualization of kids.
I don't think it's a problem. I don't see as much. If I saw an example of a child being sexualized, of course I have a problem with, you know, certain things. I will say...
So do you think we should give kids porn in school, the images of, like, gay sex?
I went to public school, and in public school, at least when I was growing up, we were absolutely given literature, you know, explaining sex, educating people.
It had pictures of like anal sex?
Oh, absolutely. And it actually talked about condom use.
What grade?
God, I mean, I don't remember, but certainly probably middle school. I think that's when we had sex ed.
So you think like books like Gender Queer, This Book Is Gay, we should give that to kids in school?
I have not read those books, so I don't know. But I do think that it's important to educate kids about sexuality, if nothing else, because, you know, I have spoken to women that were abused sexually when they were young, very young. And one thing that they've told me is that they wish that they had the language to talk about it, and they weren't educated. They grew up in I only know two that I've spoken to about this, but they've grown up in sort of societies where they weren't very educated about sex ed. They didn't receive sex ed in class. They went to a Catholic school or other types of schooling. And so I do think it's really important for kids to understand sex, because as we all know, a lot of teenagers can be sexually active. And I think sex education is important to promote, you know, healthy attitudes, healthy understandings of sex. I mean, these are human bodies. You can't just expect to send kids off at 18 with absolutely no sex ed and then think that they can function in the world.
So we should give kids like pictures of gay sex in middle school and actually elementary school, some of them.
Okay, so I just need to point this out. So Taylor gives this very like thought out, reasonable, and also gives examples of like, hey, here's why I think this matters, right? So Taylor's engaging in this like good faith dialogue of, hey, here's the reasons I'm answering your question. Here they are. And then Kaya hears all that and goes, so you think we should give kids porn in schools? And it's like, Do you have the, does she have the ability to inhale someone else's perspective, process it, and say, oh, I agree, women should not be sexually assaulted. And if they are, and part of that's because they don't know how to say no, or they don't know what consent is, we should have systems and structures and teachers who are helping people understand what those things look like. But I'm also concerned about this level of content accessible to children. That's one way to have the conversation while also still holding to a view. But instead, that's all out the window, and it's back to the talking point. Porn in schools, which, by the way, that 60 Minutes discussion that you talked about earlier, they found that the overwhelming amount of these books that were designed for adolescents were in schools where adolescents had access, and a few did slip through the cracks. It were very few, like five or six out of like the hundreds. But they were, to their point, moved back into the adolescent section. I don't think anyone's like, yes, a four-year-old should read a book that's designed for a 14-year-old. I mean, we don't think that a three-year-old should learn algebra, right? Because why? Well, their brains aren't ready and developed enough yet to handle algebra. So this idea that, you know, again, Kaya wants you to think that there's some nefarious force somewhere. Maybe it's a teacher, maybe it's an undercover Joe Biden operative, who knows? And what they're doing is they're taking these books that are written in some dark-seated laboratory, you know, designed to apparently sexualize kids for the purpose of, who knows, maybe there's some deep state cabal that wants them, I don't know. But this is happening, and these books are placed in public school libraries incognito, so that way six-year-olds check them out and become sexualized, so potentially one day they're groomed somewhere down the line. Like, that's kind of the logic that Chaya or Kaya wants you to believe, when in reality, that's not the case at all, right? So it's such a conspiratorial way of thinking about all of this. Like, there's so many gaps that your brain fills in that when you actually say out loud and interrogate, make no sense whatsoever. But for Kaya, it doesn't matter. The rhetoric is they, whoever they are trying to sexualize, whatever that means, kids. And the proof are these books that are designed for adolescents, many of which are queer, and how to actually engage in sex in a healthy and safe way, and also being aware of what certain things look like. I mean, the cartoon images are not erotic. I mean, I've seen them. They are very, like, very, you know, caricature, like, humans, and just, like, certain actions being performed, so you understand what they look like. Not designed to cause arousal, you know, like, hard stop. So anyway, I try to say that because it just drives me crazy. Friends, we're almost there. We got like 5 minutes left. You've been doing great.
I guess I'm wondering what you consider that. I think.
Do you want to see a picture?
Well, I don't know, but I mean, are you talking about the ones that you've posted on your Twitter account? Yeah. I guess those don't look like what I received when I did sex ed, but I think sex ed is important because it actually helps.
So you didn't have those types of things when you were in school?
Oh no, we had sex ed.
I posted on my Twitter.
Did you, when you had sex ed in school, did you not get books with graphic
with
imagery?
Pictures of gay sex?
I remember.
Notice how it's gay sex.
I don't remember how old you are, but
it's not just sex. It's gay sex. That is the telling. That's the telltale here, right?
Yep.
Up in the 90s when HIV and AIDS was a big thing, and we certainly learned about gay sex in school.
So those pictures I posted on my Twitter, you had graphics like that?
I actually don't know. I don't remember, to be honest. But I do think that it's really important to
But knowing those pictures, you seem to know very well what those pictures are. Do you think
that?
I don't.
I've seen
you kept referencing it.
Well, I've seen you post things,
but
I don't
know. Pull it up.
Go ahead.
But I think, I guess I feel...
Because we need to put this into context.
Yeah.
This is such a weird thing to be doing.
Such a weird thing.
Well, we won't know the context, of course, because we don't know the context of how those things are being taught.
Exactly.
Oh, so we could give kids, like, pictures of gay sex as long as it's in the proper context?
I don't know. I mean, it's up to the educator to determine.
Look, let me just say it. We can give adolescents, people coming of age, images of sex, whether it's heterosexual or... queer, I guess we could say. I don't like using the word homosexual. Yeah. It sounds too much of a like a slur. But we can give teenagers, exactly. We can give people, right, sex education that involves pictures, and that's not grooming or sexualizing them. That is informing them of what's already happening inside their bodies. I did not need anyone to tell me about when I was starting to hit puberty, right? And women started looking very attractive in very unique ways at the time, right? I didn't need a book to do that for me, but I did need some direction on how to navigate that, right?
Yeah.
And so that's where these books come into play.
Right. It's just sex ed should be queer inclusive.
Exactly.
That should be queer inclusive. That's not complicated. It shouldn't even be vaguely controversial. I mean, Taylor was even referencing that she grew up in the 90s and that, like, because the AIDS epidemic was happening, people thought it was really important, and justly thought it was really important that people understand how gay men should have safe sex. Like, this is education matters.
Can I just say, and maybe this is TMI, but Billy, you and I are friends. If I was at age 14 in the public school system, and I was given a book, and it involved, for sexual education purposes, images of two men having sex, I'd be like, yep, this isn't for me. I'm not into it. I'm not my thing, right? It wouldn't be sexualizing at all. I'd be like, yeah, okay, like, good to know that's a thing. And I have no use for this personally, right? Because it's just not how I'm wired, right? And I'm sure the same can be said for my queer friends who were like, yeah, when I saw, you know, sexual images of, or, you know, sex ed images of heterosexual couples having sex, I was like, yep. This is not for me. It does nothing for me. So that's all we're talking about, is just being inclusive of different types of sexualities that exist in the country and educating them on what it looks like to be safe, to understand consent, and also understand how bodies work so you don't hurt people. That's all this comes down to. But for Kaya, it's this huge issue that's become this huge culture war talking point where, unfortunately, queer people are getting harmed.
It's purient if it's anything but straight for her.
I don't know. I guess I'm kind of curious, Kaya, why you sort of focus so much about the LGBT? You keep mentioning gay sex, but you don't mention straight sex. Why is there such a focus on the LGBTQ world?
Oh, I don't want pictures of sex in school. Any pictures.
So you don't think children should receive any sort of sexual education, straight or gay?
I said I don't want pictures of sex in school.
But you think that
this
they should
receive
picture-free
sex education? This is the dumbest conversation ever.
No, I think we discussed this earlier.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm curious kind of how you're thinking, you know, when you think about the way that you put out content and the way that you think about growing your media empire.
Here, this is a blowjob.
Taylor's like, yes, that is so blowjob. Taylor's like, yes, Kaya, that is oral sex. That's correct, you know. And again, like, we're human beings. This is not an uncommon experience for many people.
Gender queer.
Okay.
We got 5 minutes left, friends. Hang
so
in there.
Should this picture of a blowjob be in elementary schools?
I've never seen a book like that in elementary schools, but I have no idea.
It has been. Okay. I posted about it, yeah.
So tell me a little bit about
it. So should it be in elementary schools?
I have no idea the context. I have no idea.
So in what context is it okay if it would be in elementary
schools? I have absolutely no idea. I have absolutely no idea. I would not. I don't know, Kaya, because I haven't seen the rest of that book. I don't know what's in there.
Exactly.
But there is.
This is. I'm sorry to pause a lot here, friends. I know I'm pausing often, but it's so important to highlight this. What you're seeing here is you're seeing one person who understands their own limitations of knowledge. Right? Hey, I just don't know. I don't know the answer to that question. This is not my expertise, etc. Contrasted with someone who actually knows nothing about this topic, but is acting as if they're an authority or is taking certain images out of context and saying, this is definitely in this place. How do you feel about it? And the person who's being asked is like, I don't know how I feel about it because I don't know the whole situation. Make a judgment call, right? Like, how do we know that particular book and that particular thing was in quote unquote elementary schools, and in what context was that in elementary schools, and who was seeing it? How do we know that? We don't. But for Kaya, this is just ammunition to win the argument. So for her base, when this video is posted, they can say, look, Kaya showed this journalist porn. Gay porn. And the journalist said, I can't make a judgment call on that. How immoral and depraved are they? That's how this whole rhetoric and propaganda works.
Yep.
Thanks, Billy. Thank you for affirming me because I'm very fired. Oh,
I got nothing to add.
I'm glad. It feels good. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Gay context, that it would be okay to give kids pictures like that of gay sex. Anal sex
I guess sex pictures in school. I don't know because you know who I would defer to on that, just because neither of us are sex educators.
Yes.
I would defer that question to a qualified professional, a sex educator, and say, hey, you're
Bravo.
An expert. You've treated tons, you know, you've educated tons of people. You're a full-time sex educator. You've really studied this. What are the appropriate boundaries? I don't think that myself as a journalist or a media personality, I don't think I'm the right one to make that decision. And I guess I'm wondering why.
I have seen sex educators say that they want these books in schools. So then you're okay with it?
I think I would want to talk to the sex educator and rely on whatever the sex educators say.
Okay.
I'm wondering why you feel like you're qualified to be a sex educator when you have no background in that.
Yes.
I don't want to be a sex educator. I just don't want to give kids porn in school.
Mm-hmm. I totally understand.
Gosh.
Tell me a little bit more about sort of, you know, just to change topic.
4 minutes,
about
friends.
Your content world. You know, you put out a lot. You've got a whole staff now. How do you see your business growing? And what areas would you like to expand into?
I'm not going to get into my business strategy.
Do you see yourself? So I've noticed that you've been doing more video content. Are you leading harder into Rumble?
I like doing video content.
Do you have a partnership with Rumble?
No.
Would you?
Maybe.
What are your thoughts on sort of the way that Twitter has evolved?
I love Twitter. It's the best. I love Elon. Elon rocks.
Have you spoken
Elon
to
Elon? Saved free speech. Not like on the
phone. Elon, who has posted anti-Semitic stuff, Elon, who is posting, well, I mean, for Kaya, this is all great, you know, literally great, who's posting great replacement theory nonsense. I mean, save free speech. The man has banned journalists on the platform. Yep. Again, like this is all, friends, I say it all the freaking time. I'm going to say it again. It's code words. It's not about free speech for these people because they have no problem banning voices that they think are a problem. They have no problem banning books that again, not that professionals deem appropriate, but that they deem appropriate. Kaya sits on a school board in Oklahoma, a state she's never lived in, has no children in, and she has no educational experience. And she sits on a school board to help dictate what books your children in Oklahoma can and cannot have access to. Not the parent, not parental rights, right? But what Kaya and what Ryan Walters say. This is how Christian nationalism, in particular, white Christian nationalism, functions. It's all about power and control.
I mean, she did that whole rant about she wants us to be a nation of truth. But unless truth is contested, free speech doesn't mean anything. Like, this is the whole thing. Free speech is there because we contest what is and what is not the truth.
Yeah.
It makes no sense.
Yeah.
Would you meet with her?
Yeah.
What's
been your like kind of criticism of Elon? Because you're like outspoken against Elon.
I'm a huge supporter of free speech and free expression, and I haven't liked the way that Elon has kind of arbitrarily banned journalists. I think that's a little concerning.
Who did he ban?
He banned, I think he banned Tyler Brown, the researcher. He banned, obviously, myself, Drew Harwell, other journalists.
So how do you feel about all of the conservatives that were being banned left and right when Jack Dorsey had Twitter?
I'm of the personal opinion, and I've said this on Twitter and many times, that, look, it's up to every private platform to set their own community guidelines. I'm not a huge believer in permanent bans. And I've always said that. And I defend that in the sense that these platforms evolve and people's usage of them evolve and people evolve. As you just said, you were a completely private citizen 5 years ago. You had no political ideology. Now you have a political ideology. You're a very different person.
So when I got banned from Twitter, you were upset at that? Like you thought that was wrong?
I don't remember you getting banned from Twitter.
I got banned a few times. Not permanently, but
previous to Elon.
Yeah.
My feeling about any bans is that there should be a path to redemption, should you say. That doesn't mean that I don't think that it's in the right prerogative to ban people for 5 years, 10 years, whatever. I just personally feel like if you're going to issue lifetime bans, you should give people a path to abide by community guidelines. If you join back on and you break community guidelines again, look, that's on you. But personally, I think that, that's just my belief, and I've talked about that for years. I think that there should be a path to abiding by. If somebody says, hey, look, I know I broke community guidelines, I know what I was posting was wrong, and in sort of violating those rules, I could see tech companies allowing that back. And actually, that's what Elon has done, right? I mean, he reinstated all those people that were permanently banned.
Elon is the greatest free speech warrior, I think, of all time.
I think that's
the whole thing. Friends, breathe easy. We survived. Now, here's the $1 million question. After this interview went out to the public and everyone could see it, including this audience, Kaya tweeted about it. How do you think, friends, she perceived how she did? Don't worry, I have the screenshot right here. Here's what she said. After all of that, think about what we just witnessed. The stonewalling, the horrible answers, the non-answers, the throwing it back in Taylor's face, the non-sequiturs, all of those things that happened. No actual data, no citing of sources, deflecting from responsibility. Here's what Kaya says. Just to summarize my interview with Taylor Lorenz, And these are little bullet points for those who can't see. She's not at all concerned about our open border and millions of people invading our country. She's pro-mutilation and castration of minors. She wants porn in schools. She wants the media to be allowed to defame me with impunity. She wants me to be responsible for all reactions, comments, and actions that happen after I posted TikTok, but doesn't want to take responsibility for what happens after her reporting on me. She's a lizard person. I'm not lying. She really said that. She's scared of people knowing her age. She's still wearing a mask outdoors in 2024? Because, again, for the audience who can't see the video or doesn't want to see it, she was wearing a mask. And then Charlie Kirk, our favorite, he tweets out, "Don't mess with libs of TikTok," and shares a quote-unquote highlight reel shared from libs of TikTok. So, I mean, I don't... What? How do you watch that interview and go... Man, Kai really owned the libs with that one.
I honestly think that part of the way they do that is just off of libs didn't like that. And therefore it was owning them. Right? Like it's straight up like we were ridiculous. Yes. They did the thing that you and I are doing right now, Tim, and just pointed out that this was ridiculous, reacted as though it was ridiculous. And then they say, well, that is owning them because they reacted to it at all. But of course, the thing is if you don't react, that's a win for them too. Like they're trying to create this double bind where if we just let it slide, then they call that a win. Look what we got away with. And if we show that we're irritated, say that's not all right. You said some pretty horrible things, or that was just straight up ridiculous. Then, oh, look, we triggered the libs, right? Like again, it's an attempt at propaganda. It's not an attempt at anything like good faith interactions.
I have been tracking these spaces for a very long time now. I mean, 3 years of pretty much just in watching the Twitter, watching the videos. For every one video that we respond to or that I comment on publicly, there's probably 15 that go under the radar that I just can't get to, right? And I notice a pattern. And the pattern is whenever people in this far-right media world get completely destroyed on ideological grounds or get pushed, they resort back to their propaganda, like, oh, you just, and they resort back to accusations, and then they go to dehumanization, right? Yep. So if you notice, like, Kaya's summary of the interview, I'm going to put it back up here so people can see it. It's not really about, like, here's the substance or here's the fact-checking of when Kaya was wrong. It is all, it's all propaganda. She wants porn in schools. She never said that. In fact, she was very clear about the distinction. She's a lizard person. That's dehumanizing and conspiratorial, which, by the way, is anti-Semitic in nature. Just so, I mean, I don't think Kaya knows that, but the lizard person thing comes from, like, it's very linked to anti-Semitism. So it is, you know, someone wrote in the chat, "I feel brain dead after watching this interview. I need to get some fresh air." Yeah, 100%. But someone was like, hey, why are we even platforming this person? Because some people might be thinking about that. First off, Kaya has 2-3 million followers. We're definitely not platforming her. She's way bigger than we could ever be. But I did this conversation. I want to have on the record evidence of that when we talk about and we use language like propaganda and it's anti-intellectual and they're not really interested in good faith. I have a hard copy of an actual interview between a journalist and someone who occupies the Matt Walsh, Charlie Kirk ethos and is supported by those types of people, right? This is what we're talking about here. This is not someone, I don't want to say his name, but there's someone who you and I know who's not affirming, right? But kind of comes across like they're affirming sometimes, but they tend to at least engage in good faith. I think that there's someone who wants to understand, maybe they disagree, but like they want to take the accusation seriously. That's very different to me. Now, I'm a straight person, so I'll leave it up to you to have the final say on that, Billy. But that's a very different kind of conversation and approach than what we just witnessed, right? Which is none of that and all of the propaganda to boot. And that's what really drives me crazy about this whole world. And unfortunately, white evangelicals, many of them, and we know this from the PRRI data I just covered with Andrew Whitehead on the show last week, and I'm releasing an episode on this Friday going deeper into it, that 67% of white evangelicals either are sympathetic or are very strongly in favor of Christian nationalism. So there is definitely an overlap to Kaya's audience and white evangelicalism. And this is the stuff that shapes how those people view the trans community, the queer community, et cetera. And the results are toxic and at worst deadly.
Right. I mean, and again, the connection is just obvious. She talked about the up until very recent collaboration with Seth Dillon of the Babylon Bee, like
yes,
straight up Christian nationalism. Like they've worked hand in hand. And yeah, no, I don't know. They want us in this box where they can't, where we can't respond to them, and also where we won't respond to them, and they need to be responded to. It just, yeah, you have to respond.
Yeah, I agree. Well, listen, Billy, you spent 2 hours with me. Audience, you've been here for 2 hours. Time flies when you're watching painful interviews. I'd rather get a root canal than watch that interview again. Maybe not. I'm not sure. I hate root canals, but you get my point. It's been great to have you on, of course, the show again, my friend. We will talk in the future. Friends, I appreciate you being here with us and hanging out and watching this. If you like the work that we're doing, please share the channel. Please subscribe to the channel. Give this video a like. We have a whole new approach to content coming out soon that we'll be announcing in the middle of March. I'm excited to talk to you about it. And I'm glad that you're here. So take care, be well, and we'll talk all again later on. See you later.